The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
There is a recruitment drive. The Garda recruitment drive is on, running through until the 27th of February. And one of the things that they are pointing out is that being a member of a Garda Síochána is a broad church with a fairly wide spectrum of stuff, what you get to do. And representing that spectrum, we have Emma Hennebury, who is with the Armed Support Unit in the Southern Region, and Jamie Ryan, who is at Tipperary Roads Policing. We will obviously get to why you both got into the force and what attracted you to it. Before that, give us a sense of the gig, because if we take Armed Response Unit as a case in point, you see the Audis with the sort of the red on the side of them. It's hard to tell what do you actually do in there. So what's the basic day-to-day for Armed Support Unit?
So Anton, thanks first of all for having us here. Just in terms of the Armed Support Unit, to give an overview of it, we're a second-tier response unit to regular Gardaí and any guards that are involved in investigation. So a day might look like a pre-planned operation is about to play out, or you could be responding to spontaneous calls. So it's a multifaceted.
So you get a call that says something has kicked off, get to X location.
Yes, that's a spontaneous call. So we could be on armed patrol and our control centre would just notify us of a developing incident that would require armed support. That could be somebody armed with a knife or possibly have access to a gun. And we'd have to respond to that and treat it as, you know, a risky incident that we have to.
How often do you get those kind of calls? Because it's one of those things where from the outside you assume it's fairly rare. Is it relatively common or uncommon?
It is, unfortunately, it is common that we would be called to support local guards or, as I said, a developing incident where somebody is armed. Especially in the current climate, there are a lot of mental health incidents where people, might be feeling in a detrimental zone and might be self-harming. So there's that side to it too. But yeah, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that would arm themselves or possibly be threatening somebody with either a firearm or some sort of weapon.
And how much of the job then is trying to diffuse those situations, and how much of the job is being ready to use the arms that you have?
Yeah, so as like everybody knows, the Armed Support Unit, we are equipped with lethal weapons and less lethal weapons. But our main role when we arrive at any sort of a scene is to de-escalate. And quite often it could just be the presence of one of our vehicles pulling up or us stepping out of the car that naturally de-escalates.
Sharpens the mind.
And then we also would try to negotiate with somebody if there is the option to engage in conversation to get them to maybe disarm or, you know, often just speaking to somebody. But then we do obviously have to be ready to react to if the threat level escalates, that we have to deal appropriately with that, and that's choosing the correct force option. But yeah, our presence alone can sometimes de-escalate, and that's actually our primary focus.
What do you do for adrenaline? Because I assume when you arrive on scene and you discover there's somebody there, one of the big challenges has to be staying calm enough to make the right decisions. That has to be tricky.
Definitely. There's always going to be a natural element of adrenaline, but we're so finely tuned and trained that every situation, although every situation is different, we're fully trained for every eventuality in every scenario. So our function is so specific and there's so much to do that you don't have time to actually think of the big, you know, what's actually happening as such, as opposed to what you need to do.
Now, I assume the same is true for you, Jamie, because the other issue, if you're doing roads policing, that means occasionally, I assume, having to chase people. The same applies. Trying to control red mist, adrenaline and all the rest of it. Is that a significant challenge?
It is. Everyone has their own way of managing it. I suppose, similar to Emma, a role, there's a lot of misconceptions of what is involved in roads policing. So in relation to what I do every day, is usually I'm either detailed for the car or the motorcycle.
I thought it was either or. There aren't specific motorcycle Gardaí or specific, you can get either.
No, you can get either. So I've always wanted to be a motorcycle policeman. It's something that's kind of been in me since I was a child. So once I got into the guards, I focused hard to try to get into that avenue of work. So thankfully now I am trained up in it. So our day-to-day duties in roads policing are from the get-go, as soon as we're out and about, we're looking to challenge poor driver behaviour. So literally as we leave the station, we're looking for aggressive driving, poor driving behaviours, distracted driving, so people using their mobile phones while driving, excessive speeding and road rage incidents on the road. So you'd usually see our vehicles, we've fairly highly equipped vehicles on the road. Our vehicles are equipped essentially as if they're a Garda station. So when we're on the road, we don't necessarily need to go back to the Garda station. We have our mobility device in the patrol vehicle. So anytime we deal with a call or deal with an incident, We deal with it there and then, and we're on to the next job, which prevents.
So you can scan, or you can check registration plates, driver's license numbers, all of that from the vehicle.
Essentially, yeah. So we have ANPR mounted in each of the roads policing vehicles. What that allows us to do is it scans registration plate, tells us if a vehicle is stolen, if a vehicle is uninsured, if a driver is disqualified from driving, as well as a wide range of different offences that it shows. So on a daily basis, we're usually responding to alerts on the ANPR. And notwithstanding, I suppose it's very important, is that we also are on permanent alert for intoxicated drivers under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
And do you find, I mean, obviously that the random breath checkpoints were extremely effective because cars would arrive in the middle of the night by surprise. And you'd get,
yeah.
If you're just driving around or if you're on the bike, do you often spot drivers either behaving in a way that's dangerous or being intoxicated? Is that common? Do you catch people?
It is common. There's an element of a policeman's nose to it as well. When you're travelling behind the vehicle, you're able to tell. There are giveaways of a driver.
There's bells going
behavior.
On.
There's bells going on.
Everything.
So you'll get to see a vehicle, like, it's poor driving behavior. Like, if you're driving under the influence of an intoxicant, your reaction times are different. You're not fully aware. You're not concentrating on the road. We're traveling behind you and we're looking going, right, I see there's an issue here. So,
and what are you seeing with intoxicants? Is it purely drink? Because a lot of the numbers would suggest that a lot of narcotics are now coming in when it comes to intoxicated drivers.
Drink is still an element there, but drugs, there's all form of drugs showing up as well. So when we do test people, we're regularly testing for cannabis, and cocaine is probably the main drugs that we are coming across on the roadside. And if unfortunately someone is after committing an offence and we do a drug test on them, if they do test positive for it, we'll arrest them, bring them back to the Garda station and take a specimen of their blood.
Now, you said that you had wanted to be a motorcycle guard from the outset. Was there any chance that you would join the guards and end up somewhere on border duty in Donegal, nowhere near a bike? Or have you the power to decide where, likewise for the armed response unit, can you choose where you end up?
So Emma will agree with me on this. You put in, you get out of the guards.
She's going about it.
You get out of the guards of what you put into the guards. So my background came from, my father was in the fire service. So I obviously had an interest in the emergency services. When I realised that I wanted to be a bike, work on the bikes, I applied for the guards just after I did my leaving cert. I got into the guards. So I'm 17 years now in the guards. Basically, what I had to do was do my routine training, obviously, in the Garda College. Once I got out of that, I worked on a regular unit. I obviously picked a niche in roads policing. So as the opportunity came up to apply for the roads policing, I obviously had the background to say, yeah, this is what I enjoy doing. This is
but you have to pass a series of tests on the way up, don't you? There's a standard motorcycle test, there's an advanced test. Like, there's quite a lot of hurdles to leap.
Once you get into these sections, the training is provided to you. So there is intense training programs in relation to driving that we go through in the Garda College with our driving instructors, who are world class at the art. So once you're in there, you get trained up. And what's the best thing about it is these are skills that you get to bring home with you in your own driving as well. So
Emma, what about you, and what drew you to the Armed Support Unit?
So when I was a junior guard, I would have been present at instances where the Armed Support Unit arrived on, and I was always impressed by their work ethic and, I suppose, the professionalism that they did show.
But you had decided guards for me before you decided
armed
guard.
Yes, you have to have a certain level of service before you actually can apply for the competition. So after maybe 12 years or less, possibly, a competition arose for the Armed Support Unit, and it was something that I always wanted to do. So yeah, I knuckled down and I applied for it, and thankfully I was successful. It's a rigorous competition. So it's quite a long process from start to finish. If you'd like me to go through that, I can.
Well, you can give us a short version.
Yeah, so I won't spend too long. But basically, it's a competency-based interview where you have to demonstrate your skills in, like, problem solving, resilience, teamwork, those sorts of skill sets. And then if you pass that, there's a fitness test, a medical, and then you actually go into the main training element, which is quite intense. That involves the driving, firearms handling, hostage negotiation. We're all trained emergency first responders. And yeah, so anything that would equip you to be an armed support officer.
By the way, when you talk about the arms, what is it that you have? What's the equipment you get?
So we have we've lethal options. So I have a hand pistol and a submachine gun. And then our less lethal options then would be a taser. We have a launcher, which is classed as a firearm, but I suppose to the general public it wouldn't be. But it fires rubber bullets, so it's to incapacitate a subject. And then we have We've arranged a wide range of kit. We also are still equipped with our baton, our pepper spray, and then it's your judgment and your decision making that will determine which force option you use.
And how often do you have to train? Because I assume this, you have to stay very live and proficient.
Yes.
All that.
So we're constantly training. You're not in your comfort zone whatsoever. It's every quarter, but every day we train basically because every job that you go to or call that you respond to, there's an element of feedback and debrief. And yes, we're constantly upskilling. And
also, after any incident, you sit down and discuss what worked, what
definitely
didn't, what do we change?
Yeah, even if a job went great, there's always learning outcomes from them. And we'd, you know, it's a very honest and open environment where you discuss and accept feedback. So that's why resilience is really important, that you're able then to take the learning outcome and move on to the next job.
How do you handle the stressful side of the job? Because I was queuing, I can't remember something, Pier Street Garda Station a while ago for a passport form or something. And there was a guy just hurling abuse at the guards behind the counter. And it went on for about 15 or 20 minutes. And eventually he flung a mobile phone at them that shattered on the wall, at which point they sort of, with an air of resigned reluctance, got over the desk, arrested him and put him back in whatever cell he had just come out of. But watching the calmness over a 20 minute period of haranguing, you have to come across that at certain periods. Is that water off a duck's back?
From an early stage, I think you develop a thick skin fairly quickly when you come into the organisation. You develop your own, I suppose, way of dealing with things. After a while, you become kind of not so much numb to these things, but you get to take them in your stride. I suppose it's something we all bring into the guards, where you use your rational brain and kind of risk assess every couple of minutes or so. But once you're exposed to so much of it, you get used to it after a while. And as you said, it's water off a duck's back, really.
Do you have to face it, Emma, or does the presence of a pistol reduce people's desire to shout at you?
Yeah, maybe there is a level of intimidation when people see us with their weapons, but that hopefully we won't have to resort to using them, that it is just our presence. But look, we're all human at the end of the day, and we all can familiarise and understand that people go through tough times, and it's just having a little bit of empathy for those people as well.
But there also seems to be a bit of an incentive now. You see the videos on social media where people clearly have decided, I'm going to go out and see, can I wind up a guard?
Yeah.
And usually most of the comments are fair play to that guard for staying calm through all of it. But that must make it more common than it once was.
Yeah, I suppose, look, we're seen as public property, being members of the guards, but it's just, Red Mist was mentioned earlier, it's just to kind of remain calm and composed and
Other thing on this, looking at the tough side of the gig, what about those things where you have to respond to a very difficult incident? I assume in roads policing there are instances where you will be first on scene after an accident, and what you arrive to must be very difficult to both deal with and to see.
Yeah, so we are the first line of contact in relation to serious injuries and fatal road traffic collisions, and the balanced probability we're going to be the first ones at scene. We're also the ones who call to people's homes to break the news to family members that their loved one won't be coming home. We have a great support structure within the organisation. In fairness, we all look after each other. When we attend these incidents, we have access to special services within the organisation. So nobody is left wanting if they're not feeling, if they felt like that was
that
bad.
That knock on the door must be extraordinary.
Because it does. Like, we're human at the end of the day. We are human. It hurts us just as much as it hurts everyone else. Like we see what we see at the side of the road. The organisation is good to the extent that they will approach us to make sure, how are you? Is everything okay? And Emma can attest to that we are regularly in touch with peer support, counselling and stuff. So it's not so much of a taboo as maybe in a past life it may have been. It's quite open now. So,
as in that 20 or 30 years ago there might be a culture of stiff upper lip and get on with it, and that's just the job.
No, it's pretty much a brand new structure in place, and it's fantastic, to be honest.
Still must be tough, some of the stuff you have to deal with though.
It is, and I mean, sometimes it's only when you go home and you're back in your day-to-day life that you realise the gravity of something that you've been at that day. But like I mentioned earlier, resilience is important for my particular role, and it's just being able to reach out if there are incidents that have been quite, you know, intense, or as we deal with such high risk operations, that there are outlets for support. There's peer support, there's counselling services available. But I suppose the unit that I work on as well, we're so close that they become your family, and you know, you've real good camaraderie there. So it's great to have that support.
Do people clock you as guards when you're not in uniform? Do they?
Absolutely.
Is it a walk? Is it how do they tell?
It's usually you have the head of a guard, and it's always the way. You have the head of a guard. Yeah, absolutely.
And now, do you think that is that you had it anyway, and people would have thought that even if you hadn't gotten it, or is there something about being in the guards that gives you the head of a guard?
Maybe part of the haircut.
Yeah,
the strict haircut that was kind of brought into us when we. Back in the day when we were first doing our training, the short back and side.
Although it's getting all very loose now. I'm seeing a lot of guards with beards and all sorts of stuff.
It is very visible,
yeah. Tattoos and all manner of crack. I realise, given that it is likely that somebody from the organisation might be listening, so you're limited in how truthful you can be, but is it a career that you would recommend knowing what you now know?
100%. I was on the way up here today, I was just thinking the two good decisions I made in my life, the first one was to join the guards and the second was to join the armed support unit. Like, I thoroughly enjoy it. There are very tough days, but it's really, really rewarding. And you have a great sense, Jamie, you'll understand, if you do a good job, you have a good sense of value going home, don't you, after the
Absolutely.
Day?
It's very rewarding. It's not boring. If anyone does have a gut feeling that this career actually might be for them, I highly recommend that just taking the leap and go for it. We have our recruitment campaign running on until the 27th. Of February at 3 p.m. Anyone that does want to apply can contact your local Garda station, speak to us. We're here to help. But they can apply through publicjobs.ie, and it is definitely a job worth doing.
Guys, thank you both very much for your time. That is Emma Hennenbury, who is from the Armed Support Unit in the Southern Region, and Jamie Ryan from the Tipperary Roads Policing Unit.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.